Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 74!
74!
Yay!
Yay!
Yay! It's a wonderful time.
Yes, it is.
We're in the 70s.
Flares are all over the place. It's very exciting.
There are power cuts. my sister was born. That's monumental.
Yes, I wasn't born yet, so it's all good.
No, I wasn't either. How are you, Nick?
I'm alive.
All right.
It's another day. I've got a drink.
Another day, another dollar.
Exactly, and my emergency podcast Negroni.
Yes, you've made me an emergency podcast Negroni, because we both had quite the day, haven't we?
It's been a mad day of hectic running around, so Negronis are in order. The energy level's back up again.
I know, and it sort of flies in the face of logic that Negronis get our energy levels up.
Pure booze.
Yes, but some people that makes them go to sleep, in the same way that certain drugs and people use for microdosing makes them go to sleep.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's true. I've gotten very deep immediately. It does the opposite. It focuses the brain.
Right.
Drugs? Do you want to take some of those? We'll see. I don't know.
I'm going to stick with the Negroni for the moment. Depends how boring your story is, really.
Oh, okay.
So, well. if I start dozing off, then maybe.
Then maybe. But,
so, I'll leave that for you to judge if you see me nodding off. Better be a damn good story, so I don't have to.
Well, yeah, I'll try. Any poisonings this week?
No. No, well, the amount of people who are getting sick at the moment, there might as well be. There's a spate of illness. And non-COVID-related illness.
Non-COVID-related.
Just general sort of illness, colds and flus and that sort of bugs going around the place.
A summer cold.
Indeed.
So that your grandmother used to warn you about. Oh, you've got a summer cold.
So that's wiping out people all over the place. And then I have to do all their work.
Well, speaking of people just making Nick do all the work and microdosing to get through it, I think it's time for us to thank our lovely Patreon subscribers.
Oh, I think so. Thank you so much to Marie Smith.
To Kat Gray.
To Melanie Levers.
To Crystal K.
To Bastille Quinn.
And Justin Ware.
Marvellous. Thank you very much, darling people.
Very, very sexy Patreon subscribers. We love you. We love you very much. We hope you enjoyed our stories this week. We return to the old west.
Absolutely.
Old middle, old east.
East, easty, westy, America-y place.
To be fair, we did establish in that episode that I cannot tell east from west.
No, well, this is true. This
kept
is true.
Yelling that Pennsylvania was in the west.
Yes, absolutely. We went all over the place.
We did. But there was a continuation of the Harp Brothers story.
Quite, yes.
Yes.
You want to hear more Wild West shenanigans? It's all on Patreon.
Come there. Well, Nick.
Hello.
Are you ready?
No.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Yes.
Or we could drink poison and talk about
cocktails.
Oh, you're not even finishing it. It's fine. We're going to go with the first one?
Yes, as I finish my Negroni.
Have you actually downed that?
I've not much left.
To be fair, neither have I, actually. We've now become these people. Negronis don't even touch the sides. Bring me more Negronis. You need a throne for that. Well, let's go with the first one,
okay.
And let's also have some extra Negronis on the side. This will be fun, people. It will be a good episode. For hooray, 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 it is my episode.
Yes.
We can't possibly have a story without several cocktails in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell. That will flavour our cocktail of the week. My story this week's the Mapic, and this week's secret ingredient is mice.
Classic cocktail ingredient.
Mice in pinnies.
Absolutely.
No, they're not in pinnies.
They're not in pinnies?
No.
Well, that's ruined my cocktail, then.
You were basing it all on that.
I was basing it on the pinny.
Mice, it's not a traditional ingredient.
It's not oft used in a cocktail. It must be said.
No, but we had some very good suggestions already on social media, people chiming in. And also, I am with people on the mice love rather than mice hate.
I have no issue with the mouse as long as they stay outside.
If you saw one in the house, would you scream?
I wouldn't scream. I'd be going, oh, fuck, there's a mouse in the house. That's really annoying.
But you'd be going, what a rhyme that is.
I'd be going, oh, that means I've got to get off my chair. This is very inconvenient.
This is why you need a cat. Everything comes back to the argument that I think you need a cat. I don't mind a mouse. A mice? I don't mind a mouse, I don't. I don't mound a... Mark.
You don't mound a moose.
I don't mound a moose either. Moose, I have problems with coming in the house.
Just running through the house.
Yes, just, oh God, there's a moose in here. I have to get up and manage this incident.
That will be quite the incident.
Yes, I think mice are quite sweet.
They're very... Yes, but if there's one, there's a 5 million.
But that's generally the rule with everything. With, no, not with
mooses as well.
With exactly. With what's the plural of mooses? Meese.
I think just mooses.
Multiple mooses. Like if a moose came in the house, there would just be like a parade of 500 that's running English, through. Yeah.
There's ever just one. Okay. It's like ants. There's ever just one.
It's not moose, though. We're not dealing with moose.
Boo.
Moose. A mouse riding a moose. That I want to see. Okay. But
what's going on?
What's happened? The Negroni was a great idea. Quality podcast material here. Well, with mice, not moose.
Nah, boo.
A mice maybe on the back of the moose. As your inspiration ingredient, what have you come up with, Nick?
Well, as we said, there are not a lot of mises in traditional cocktail making.
Jesus for us, Mises. Everyone was singing that along.
I have no idea what that was.
Dude, that's from Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Oh God, I've said something dreadfully horrible.
You have seen, right?
I have. I don't remember all the words to all the songs.
Well, you need to remember those lines because it's the best line in the bloody film.
Right, well, it's not nothing to do with that either.
Okay.
No more Negroni for you.
Or, let me just throw something at you, more Negronis for me.
So, moving on to vaguely another cocktail. Is this wise? I probably not.
With
so we
mice.
Have mice. We have mice. I have not chosen mice. I've gone for a singular mouse.
Oh, a mouse?
Yes.
Ooh, okay. So alone.
A lone singular rodent.
It's struck out on its own.
Absolutely.
It's making its fortune in the big city. Oh, good.
So we are having a white mouse.
Okay.
We're having a white mouse cocktail.
A white mouse.
Yeah, indeed. So there are a few out there. So people have put some stuff on the social events, various things. There are a lot of Disney filmed ones.
What?
Well, like they have Oreos on them as ears and things, like Mickey Mouse type thing.
Oh, no, that's stupid.
Yeah, so none of that. So we're having a white mouse, as I've said that 12 times, I think.
Sounds indeed. Adorable.
It sounds well. We shall see. There's a good story behind it, which I shall tell you shortly.
Wonderful. With a white mouse, I'm excited. I think it is time for us to go into the poisoner's cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a minute.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, hello. Nick, a white mouse.
Yes, indeed.
That was an eventful trip to the poisonous cabinet kitchen, wasn't it?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, we sipped Negronis, and then you yelled at me to go and get mice from the street, and then we came up with an alternate story for the Pied Piper of Hamlet, which became disturbing quickly. It's been wonderful. A white mouse, though, we have. Now, I have one big issue here.
Do you? What could that be?
It's not white.
It's not white. This is very true.
It's yellow. Wee-coloured, if you will.
It is.
If you had wee that colour, you need to go to the doctor.
Indeed, that would be disturbing.
You know what? It's luminous. Now you've held it up.
It's an awesome colour.
Ooh, awesome, I'm into that.
Awesome colour.
It's a long drink, so little snifter. Sniff first. I don't know what that is. I think I know one of the ingredients because you made me bring you some.
So hopefully, yes, you know one of them.
So hopefully I know one, but I won't say it yet. But should we dive in and have
Let's
a little taste? Okay, the white mouse, people. Blah, blah, blah. Ooh, that assaults the mouse, but not in a bad way. I don't know. It was a lot. Okay, so I do know that this is a fizz-based cocktail. There's some bubbly in here.
Bubbly going on in here.
Delicious!
Now, I think it's actually potentially a lot better than I've made it. Because
Nick.
I was making it, I came across one particular flaw in my methodology.
That it needed all the different ingredients?
Which I did. I had none of the ingredients.
You've just made shit
and
up.
And I just weed in a glass.
what happened?
So it is named after a woman called Nancy Wake.
Okay.
And it was made in the American bar of the Stafford Hotel in London.
Yes.
Specifically for her. Towards the end of her life, in sort of like the late 90s, early 2000s, she pretty much lived at the hotel.
Mm.
And the bar there, a very famous bartender, made this drink on her behalf. He called it the White Mouse. It was called the White Mouse because that was her Gestapo code name when she was in the French Resistance during the Second World War.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
No.
She was a resistance fighter in the Second World War who saved God knows how many hundreds of Allied pilots who were being shot down and parachuted down. She got them out of France and stuff like that. Bombed railways, organised resistance fighting, and her Gestapo codename was the White Mouse, because they could never catch her.
And she lived the rest of her life in a hotel. Drinking cocktails. Why aren't we her?
Yep, sort of holding court at the bar every evening. They made this in her honour.
Oh my God, what a great story.
Yeah, and I mean, there are books and things being written about this woman, because of the amazing things that she did.
I had quite a reaction to it, because it's quite sharp. It is.
Now, this is one of the things that I think I may have done slightly wrongly.
I'm going to have a second sip and see if I can work out what else is in here.
It does.
It is nicer on the second sip. It's very sharp.
Yeah.
This is really lemony, I'm going to say.
And it shouldn't be. It's lemon, honey, it's saffron gin.
Oh, nice.
Which is where it gets its colour from. So it's saffron-infused gin.
So I was sure you were going to say chartreuse or something.
Not chartreuse. There's no chartreuse. I made it a few days ago. So I've got a bottle and it's amazing, amazing colour. Topped up with fizz to make it lovely.
Delicious.
What I've done, though, is because I watched a few videos of the particular chap making it, and they just poured honey straight from a honey squeezer, not a honey syrup.
Oh, no.
So when it hits the ice, all it's done now is just congealed and solidified. Yeah. So it's lost all of the honey in there. So I should have used a honey syrup rather than just neat. Because that's what the man on the YouTube did. But as soon as I chucked the ice in, it just went separated and went ka-chunk.
Bad YouTube video.
So I think that would be an absolutely lovely, lovely drink.
Yeah.
If it had that added sugar that is now missing.
And I don't know if there's anything we can do to rectify it at the moment.
There is some agave in the cupboard up there.
So if you agave wanted, would work.
So reach behind you. Okay. And pop a drop in and then give it a stir and we can have
all right, this. You know what? This is live, people.
This is live mixology.
This is the first time you've probably heard that I'm going to the poisoner's cabinet.
Yeah, it's not happening. The kitchen,
you
just the cabinet.
You have to narrate, Nick, while I'm not.
She's going, she's standing up, she's opening the door, she's reaching in. Oh, she's reaching in. She's knocking stuff over. As she usually does when she goes in there.
One time that happened.
She's going into the other cabinet, she's going to get a spoon. They're right in front of her. They're right in front of her.
Where are they?
Look down.
Is that the crystal
look
lake?
Down.
Come
look down.
Now,
come
out
on,
now.
Come on. Come on. There, you got your hand on it. It's there. She's managed to make it back to the table.
I'm back.
No one died.
Okay, so we're going to add a little agave syrup.
Maybe a wee drop.
Okay, and I'm going to stir.
Give it a stir. If this actually works, I might just go and mix up another batch with the agave syrup instead.
Because you've got a whole bottle of fizz to get through while I tell the story.
And I've got more, and I've made a load of saffron gin.
So, okay, we've added our agave. Mm. Let's have a little taste, see if it helps. That did help,
it do.
Actually.
It do.
That
probably
helped
do with a bit
in
more.
A really good way.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that took the edge off. Give me more agave syrup.
there's the recipe calls for half an ounce of honey in this, which is quite a considerable amount. Give it a go. Do it properly. Not like I do.
So, Nick, you made saffron gin.
I did.
So how did you make saffron gin?
Got some gin and put some saffron in it.
Wow, God. The secrets of the ages are coming out here.
That's pretty much what it is.
Well, so how long do you infuse it for?
I did it for 2 days.
Does it make a nice gin?
This is the first time I've tried it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's the first time I've used it for this. I don't know how much flavour it imparts.
I only ever use saffron for the colour,
yeah,
I find.
Exactly. It makes it a stunning colour.
And it makes it fancy and expensive.
Well, exactly. And you need but a few, what are they called, threads?
Yeah.
Strands. Of bits.
You were doing so well. At yeah. But a few strands.
But a few
bits.
Threads of saffron. Through bits.
The agave syrup has really helped that. It's just taken the edge off the... Obviously, it was missing the sugar from the start because the honey congealed. But that's lovely. Yeah. That's a great champagne cocktail.
Good old Nancy.
I like it. It's been a while since we've had a champagne cocktail, and this I am here for it.
And mainly, I've got half a bottle of champagne to get through now.
And now he's going to drink it. And
ooh,
I
yes.
have to try and rein him in while I talk.
Good luck.
So with our white mice, Mises.
White moose.
Our white mice while riding a moose.
Now, this is actually an entirely different cocktail now with agave, not honey. So this is actually the yellow moose.
The yellow moon.
That I have renamed and rechristened this with that slight variation of ingredients. The world famous yellow moose cocktail.
Yes, the white mouse in honour of this legendary person, this legendary drinker and, you know, hero of the ages. And you've just bastardised it by just going, syrup, we'll stir it with our finger. It's a yellow moose. Yay. The white mouse rides it into battle.
Yes.
So we have our white mouse. We have a yellow moose. We are fine for this journey. We're going to go on. Are you ready for a story, Nick?
Oh, I think so.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. Well, it's a good story.
I should have
said. I think. It's got some gems in it. For today, Nick, we are going to tell the tale of Mary Piercy. Well, she's a woman of passion, Nick.
Excellent.
Passion. She may have had a few secrets, too.
Well, who doesn't?
And again, this is a story. Sources are pretty good on this. There's a few bits in it which are true. but they have no other information where you go, what the hell is happening here?
So a few bits of the show is made up.
No, I wish I had. I wish I had. There were some bits where I went, that's bollocks. No.
No, that didn't happen.
Okay. So Mary was born Mary Eleanor Wheeler in 1866. And her home life was fairly normal. Or was it, Nick?
Well, I don't know yet. You haven't told me.
Possibly some is known about her childhood.
Some? Well, some.
Some.
We've moved up in the world.
Some. This is the bit where you go, has it been made up? Well, I'll let
you
judge.
She was raised by mooses.
She was. The time on the moose farm was very traumatic for her. It paved the way for the rest of her life. Well, it may as well have been. So maybe not all was well on her happy home life, because there are two versions of her childhood. Now, it was said that her father, Thomas Wheeler,
was a moose
with a dark,
I'm
dark
be
soul.
Really annoying about this.
I don't mind. Thomas had a troubled soul, seeing as he was convicted and hanged for murder.
That's fairly troubled, yes.
In 1880.
Was he Jack the Ripper?
No, he wasn't.
Garbo.
No, 1880.
Ah, oh, a bit earlier.
Dude, you're a bit early for that. When Mary was but 14 years old, Thomas Wheeler had allegedly killed a local farmer named Edward Anstey. There's no information on how.
Death by moose.
Death by moose. Open the door. They came
just
in.
Just herd of moose. I can imagine there on the head moose riding, trampling through, with 500 mooses behind him.
Well, the guy's dead. So Thomas was hanged until he was dead in St. Albans Jail in November of 1880.
Was anyone hanged till they weren't dead?
Yes.
Okay.
To be honest, Nick, it's a future story I'm going to tell you. People, John Badicam Lee, it's coming up. And from his cell, he allegedly wrote to the farmer's widow, the man he had killed, asking for her forgiveness for his crime. Not for his sake, but for the sake of his wife and his teenage daughter, who he would hope would not suffer the sins of the father. 'Twas not to be. Now, this fact is disputed by later researchers.
And by people who were there.
People who were there.
And him. Went,
isn't it? Well, people think that there was a Thomas Wheeler who was hanged for murder. People aren't sure whether they can completely link it to Mary. Really, the records are sketchy, so maybe some liberties have been taken
there.
It's
probably a relatively common name.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, unless he was the one Japanese Thomas Wheeler who had come to town that day.
I mean, it's a classic Japanese name, it has to be said.
Indeed. An alternate story, painting a different but equally tragic picture, is that Mary's father was actually a James Wheeler, and that he had been injured at work, no idea of the job.
He made wheels.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine, oh, yes, that's... I had not crossed my mind at all. Is that what wheelers do? Maybe they made cheese.
Oh, potentially.
A wheel of cheese.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cheese, yeah.
But he was injured, as his work, at the cheese factory. And he was brought home in a terrible state and died at home in front of Mary 2 days after his... Stuffed full of cheese. But from his injuries, this was all traumatic for Mary.
Well, cheese-based injuries, I imagine, would be fairly traumatic, really.
They would be, yes. If he was a
cheese coming out of your ears and your eyes, and it's just like, no, it's not good.
But so, it's whatever's happened in her childhood, because she's got multiple fathers who have died in many, many ways. It's not necessarily the best start for her. So sources conflict on this. But let's flash forward 10 years.
Let's.
10 years, Nick, to the late 1880s. Mary's in her early 20s, in London and in her prime-ish. Now, we have a description. We love a description on this show.
Yeah.
Yes, a description of her. She is 7 foot tall with a great big bushy beard.
Nice. And wheels.
From her father. It was the thing he left her on her deathbed. Take these wheels and go with them to find your fortune. Dad, honestly, this is weird. She was 5'6", perfectly respectable height, russet hair and blue eyes.
Okay.
Was commented, nice shapely hands. One account read, her face was not overly pretty, but she had no trouble attracting men.
Well, there we go.
I will use the most common picture of her for this for these episode notes. And it's not flattering. It could actually be the likeness of her that ended up in a certain house of wax, shall we say. But it looks...
In a certain house of wax.
A certain house of wax. I'm building to this.
No. Right, okay.
No, but the picture looks like she is a cross between Nosferatu, I am not kidding, just because really pale eyes in the picture, and her teeth are protruding.
She's a vampire!
It's either Nosferatu or she looks like Gerald the sea lion from Finding Dory, which, as you know, I'm obsessed with.
You're obsessed with Gerald.
I am obsessed with Gerald from Finding Dory. Best bit in that film. But it's a weird picture, and anyone who's seen it will just go,
well,
Gerald!
I look forward to seeing it.
Indeed. Anyway, despite her weird teeth and blood-sucking ways, Mary was indeed a hit with the gentleman. When she is in London, in her early 20s, she's made a few of male friends. In her late teens, she took up with a carpenter named John Piercy. And that's where she gets her surname. She's never married to him, but she decides to take his name. This is where the rumours might be persisting that her father was a hanged murderer.
Too many Wheeler associations.
Exactly. She wants to avoid the scandal of her murderous father and carve out a respectable life for herself in London. Respectable? Well,
respectable London.
Exactly, London, godless place.
Well, godless.
Again, she is has a relationship with this man, but they're not married. No.
See, godless.
Godless. The relationship does not last very long because he's not really in favour of all of her infidelities, shall we say.
Well, that does tend to have that effect, I feel.
Yes. So, as we said, Mary has no trouble attracting male attention. She was known to walk about, as it were, with gentlemen. Walk about being a euphemism for shagging.
Okay.
But she's not a prostitute. I should put this out, but she has a lot of male attention and she's not married to any of them. She is attracted to fine standing men with
fine extending
men. As far as the eye could see.
They extended so well.
At huge salaries, huge tracts of land. Yes, Piercy moves on because of her infidelity, but no matter. She has other chaps who are interested in her company. She is happy to entertain them, and they are the sort of people who will provide for her. She has one lover, Mr. Crichton, who provides rooms for
her. That's a good name.
I knew you were going to hone in on that. Mr. Crichton. Michael Crichton's great-grandfather. So he provides rooms for her in Kentish Town. I'm sure purely to read poetry and admire pottery together. Nothing untoward whatsoever.
Well, yes. Everyone's done that.
Of course, everyone's rented a flat for someone you like.
Yeah, no, I meant in the read poetry and admire pottery.
But that's what you do in a room. Absolutely. Yes, exactly. Nothing else.
God, no.
Yes, Mr. Crichton visits her once a week in her rooms to read poetry and
admire
pottery.
So you say Crichton, not Jurassic Park. I was thinking Crichton as in Red Dwarf.
Oh, that's a very good point.
So you went to that old Jurassic Park thing. I hadn't thought of that.
I mean, it may be Crichton, actually.
I was thinking Red Dwarf.
So Mr. Crichton, robot or not, visits her once a week in her rooms and ensures she is well provided for. But that doesn't stop her from entertaining the affections of other men. She has other chaps who are interested.
If he knows he's coming at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday, well, and is like, I've got all this spare time to fill.
Indeed, she has a system in place.
Could have a schedule.
Exactly. Now, it's not to say that she's got loads of men on the go, but she definitely has the affection of another man, a man who is very dear to her heart, Mr. Frank Samuel Hogg. He is a furniture remover.
Oh, is he indeed?
It's a good trade. He is particularly impressive. You know what really impressed her about him? That he had printed business cards.
Mike, well, that does it, really. Mm. It is exciting.
The embossed letters.
Ooh. Oh.
The gold leafing behind. You're actually getting excited.
Was the back printed on too?
The back was a different colour.
My God! Luxury.
So when she received his card, she exploded, apparently. But they would start a relationship. Frank would visit, not at the same time as Mr. Crichton, of course, hence the schedule. The schedule
absolutely.
Is needed.
Yeah.
Frank had his own key, but Mary would leave a light in her window to signal when he could come by and call upon her. So he's walking his dogs 10 times a day up and down that street with the key in hand.
Is that a candle lit?
Yeah, he doesn't even have a dog. He's just dragging a brick on a stick. It was a fine arrangement. And Mary was very taken with Frank, the furniture man. I'm not sure she was entirely a barrel of laughs herself. It is said she suffered from depression. Now, okay, this is the 1880s where people go, women suffer from depression. They're just a bit sad because everything is awful for women around about this time. She drank heavily. she was said to suffer seizures. This is something that would come up later on. That was she actually suffering from epilepsy? And at the time, epilepsy is not really recognised for the medical condition that it is now. It is seen as a mental illness. So lots of theories about her mental health have been made since this case has come to light. They say that she was depressed, she drank a lot, but obviously she was entertaining enough to attract the attention of these men. And
well, that's
to,
where the drink helped.
Yeah. Yeah, the drink definitely helps. She didn't have to work as well because she had these gentlemen callers who would support her, who paid for her accommodation and paid for her attention. She was erratic at best, let's just say. But what's really, really troubling Mary around this time, even though she has this attention from these chaps and she has such affection for Frank, is that for all of his business cards, he can never really be hers. Because, of course, Frank is married.
No, they always are.
No,
the married. Ones with the business cards are always married.
Married to Phoebe Hogg.
Phoebe
that
Hogg.
Is a bad surname as well.
It's not a great surname, is it, really?
If you marry into it. Frank had taken up with Mary before his marriage to Phoebe. This sort of arrangement, we're not talking about the really, really higher echelons of society.
Well, no, if he's a furniture removal man, he's a bit of a, yeah, no. He's sort of middle, lower middle class at best type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, so there are relationships going on. So Phoebe, he meets after he has already known Mary. They have a relationship, they have a casual arrangement going on. He probably has the same sort of casual arrangement with Phoebe. No proposal of marriage is made to either of these women, and maybe it's just acknowledged, it's fine, but Phoebe falls pregnant.
Ah, that'll do it.
Yeah. And she's 3 months pregnant when it's just gotten to the point of, okay, you have to marry this woman,
yes.
Otherwise people are going to talk and she ain't going to be happy about
yep.
it.
No one's
going
to ask you to remove their furniture.
So he's already in a relationship with Mary when Phoebe falls pregnant. He has no choice but to marry her, and they marry her he does. And a daughter is born in 1889. The daughter is also named Phoebe. So more Phoebes.
Phoebe too.
Nicknamed Tiggy. Tiggy okay. the baby. Whatever arrangement Frank and Mary have, Mary is obviously a bit unsettled about his new domestic arrangement. Does she have some jealousy about this new lover? Is it anger about her income and support being cut off from Frank? Is that going to slowly dwindle? She feels that some discomfort in the situation. But then in her love letters to Frank, she tries to be very kind, very caring. She apparently loves him so much that she is willing to accept whatever other relationship he has outside of theirs, that she will be friendly. She knows that this woman has fallen pregnant. Oh, she's trapped him into a marriage. But she will try to be friends with her. She understands he has to marry her, but she is her his real true
right.
love.
Yes, absolutely.
So it was Mary feeling benevolent, trying to be friendly, that on the 24th of October 1890, a Friday, Mary sent a messenger boy to deliver a message to Phoebe Hogg, asking her over for tea. Phoebe and the baby should join her for afternoon tea. Oh, how delightful.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Really, do you?
Yeah.
But tea
yeah.
is such a lovely thing.
Tea is generally a lovely thing.
And Phoebe is so pleased to go. Oh, she washes and
why,
dresses
why
the baby.
Why would you be pleased to go to your husband's mistress?
Okay, this area is foggy at best. We don't know whether Phoebe knows that Mary is the mistress, but Mary has
right.
definitely tried to be friends with Phoebe. They have been friends. They have been friends.
Well,
they've made acquaintance.
That's a bit scary.
Yes.
If she doesn't know that she's shagging her husband.
We can't
and
say
so
for certain whether she knows.
Met in a lovely cafe or something and happened on a meeting, and that takes it into scary, stalker, creepy level.
It's entirely possible that she does. And that some sort of arrangement, he goes, okay, this happened. I don't think that's likely.
I suppose things like mistresses and the like were generally more prevalent of in that era.
We're
things.
In the 1890,
so,
though. It's getting a little bit, no,
yeah.
come on now. They've obviously she's had a relationship with Frank. Phoebe has had a relationship with Frank that is sexual before marriage.
Yeah, so she's obviously no angel herself.
No. It's a little bit of these days. Oh yeah, the ex-girlfriend. Turds want to be friends with you. Like, I totally want to be friends with you.
That always works out well.
Always works out well, yeah. I find. Always works out well. Phoebe Jr., Tiggy, is now about 18 months old. And Mary has sent this messenger boy to say, come over for tea. Phoebe is happy to attend. Or, she, well, she, she's going to
she's
attend.
She's going to attend, yeah. I can imagine it being one of those things like... like Frank going, oh, go on, go and meet her, you'll have a lovely time, sort of thing. Wouldn't it be nice if you two got on?
Isn't it? Yes, yes, because it will stop you to, I just need all of my bitches to get
along. Exactly, yeah.
Literally that. Literally. And let's not, let's very much assume that happened.
She can come over sometimes as well.
Well, Phoebe travels over to Mary's lodgings, pushing little Tiggy in the pram. She enters the house. Around 4 p.m. that afternoon, a neighbour called Charlotte Priddington, hears a scream coming from Mary's lodgings. And sounds of breaking glass. Charlotte even calls over the garden fence to see if everything's okay, but she does not hear a reply and everything settles in the house. Later that evening, another neighbour, it could have been Charlotte, it could have been another one, sees a woman walking down the street. It's dark and she is walking on her own, pushing the black pram.
Okay. We don't know which woman it is.
At 7 p.m, a man is walking along Crossfield Road in Hampstead on his way home from work. When he passes a pile of rubbish, and on closer examination, he sees that a woman is lying amongst the debris. The woman's head is wrapped in a lady's cardigan. Something taint right.
No, indeed not.
A policeman is called. When they unwrap the head of this woman, they see that her throat has been slashed so deeply as to have nearly decapitated her, that her skull has received several vicious blows, almost crushing her head. On later examination, they will see that her arms and her head were bruised, indicating a violent struggle. Yeah. But there is no blood at the scene, so it is clear that she has been killed elsewhere. As the police search the area, they find an even more gruesome discovery. Trigger warning, people. You probably know what's coming.
Yes.
They find the black perambulate, abandoned in Hamilton Terrace, and its cushions are soaked in blood. The next morning, the body of 18-month-old Tiggy is discovered in Finchley, away from the pram.
Oh, that's a bit of a trek.
The baby has been smothered. There is no trauma to the body, but the baby has died from suffocation. So we have two dead bodies. Who is responsible for this gruesome scene?
Can I guess?
No. Okay. No, Nick, how could you make such assumptions? Well, leave it to the Saturday evening papers. The Saturday evening papers will report on this. And this is where Frank Hogg and his sister Clara, who have been searching and inquiring anxiously after Phoebe and her baby, read an article to say that a woman and a baby's body have been found. So they read this story. Frank sends Clara over to Mary's house to see if she knows anything about the disappearance. Where is Phoebe? Mary, of course, denies ever having seen her. Clara, Frank's sister, she says to Mary, come with me to the morgue because I have to identify the body. And Mary allegedly goes with her.
Yeah, well.
Goes with her. And it's weird about this time that Mary does not really behave in the way that anyone should if trying to cover up a murder.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. She attends the morgue with Clara. Clara has to identify the body. Mary starts making a really big scene about her. Don't look at the body. Don't look at the body. Don't look at the body. And then when she does look at the body and Clara just goes, yes, 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 that is Phoebe. Mary is hysterical in the background. Every time they mention the injury, to the point of not just hysterical crying, as in, like, this is weird. The police are like, okay, she is acting very, very strangely.
Now, is that sort of overcompensating, trying to play it upset, but just getting it wildly wrong? Or being desperately guilty?
So Frank is called in to identify the body as well. And of course, being the husband, he comes under suspicion.
Yes.
Like, what have you got to do with this? They assume he's guilty. They search him. They question him. They ask about the screaming woman who's been in the morgue going, who the fuck is this bitch here? He admits that he was in a relationship with Mary. Mm-hmm. They find a key on his person. They would ask him, what do these keys do? What properties do they relate to? He goes, okay, that's a key to Mary's house. She is my mistress. So the police think, better talk to this screaming crazy Mary woman.
Probably should, yeah, probably should.
Now, of course, Nick, a day or so has passed. Whatever has happened in the house, the chance of finding evidence is pretty slim.
I think it's probably quite likely in this case.
So you would think... Oh, Nick.
Sorry, have I preempted your dramatic moment?
Oh, no. The police enter Mary's home and they find it full of blood spatters.
Yes,
Literally, it is on the walls. It's in the kitchen. There is a carving knife. There is a poker covered in blood and hair. There is bloodstained clothing, an apron that stuff has been wiped on. There is blood on the goddamn ceiling, Nick.
Well, she was cooking dinner. She was trying to make a lovely, lovely meal. She had people come over for tea. Could have made an effort. May have got slightly over out of hand.
And her blackberry jus just got over bubbled.
Over, exactly.
That's a good excuse. Absolutely. Two windows are broken. Cooking is difficult.
Cooking is difficult.
Yeah.
It involves a lot of throwing pokers.
There's a rug with bloodstains and also a strong smell of paraffin where she's tried to clean it. Spillages,
yes. Perhaps she was going less for an afternoon tea, more of a, I'm going to cook you a cow. I bought a cow.
The moose ran off.
The moose ran off through the windows. So
I mean, I think that's quite a good excuse.
Yeah, that's what I would go with.
The first explanation from Mary, who is standing there, is, I had a nosebleed.
Brilliant. And sneezed a hell of a lot all over the place.
It gets better.
Oh, God. Okay. I like that.
She had a nosebleed. Far, far better is her follow-up. As the police go, okay, and stand just clocking blood around the room, Mary does not stand there. No, she goes to the parlour and she starts playing her piano and singing loudly.
Absolutely.
And when they ask again about the blood, she explains in a chanting song that she's been killing mice, killing mice, killing mice, killing mice.
Yeah.
That is true.
Okay. I like the killing mice song. That's a good twist.
She mutters at first that she has had a problem with mice and she's been trying to kill them. And then she goes to the piano, sings, whistles, and just is chanting over and over again, killing mice, killing mice. Song. Killing mice, killing mice.
I feel potentially the next Demon Djinn hit going on.
Don't think it hasn't crossed my mind. But yes, she has a problem with mice. Clearly you do, because they're all over this fucking house. And you've killed them with every weapon known to man. Confronted with this scene, the police shockingly don't take her explanation at face value. Mary is arrested. And she is charged with the murder of Phoebe and Phoebe Jr., the baby. Mm. When they search her further, they find that Mary is wearing Phoebe's wedding ring.
Yeah, that'll do it as well.
She's actually got a wedding ring on as well. Where she got it, we don't know, but she's wearing that ring on top of it. Awaiting trial, Mary tells the women who are responsible for monitoring her, for looking after her. They're not exactly guards, but there are women who are positioned with women in jail. She starts sort of on this story that she had invited Phoebe to tea, but Phoebe had made a comment that greatly offended her. But as she's telling the story, Mary seems to realise that she's incriminating herself. Mm. And then just stops talking. The guards obviously report on it and the women go, check this shit out. So at her trial at the Old Bailey, her case was heard before the same judge who presided over Kate Webster's case. A case we have covered before, 11 years earlier. Now, Mary pleads not guilty. Why?
That's ambitious.
Mice, I tell you.
Mice, it was always mice.
Mice. The prosecution read out various love letters that she had kept between herself and Frank. These letters professing her love for him, promising him she would never leave him, even if he got married. She would do her best to befriend his new wife. But his marriage was just forced because of pregnancy. She doesn't mind. It's okay. They will be together. The prosecution surmises
move
Mary...
Move on, girl. Move on.
I know. The prosecution surmises that Mary was not content with his arrangement for long and decided to ensure that Frank would be hers forever. Mary, it was said, had drawn the blinds of her house before Phoebe came. It's a small detail, but I find that really chilling.
It's slightly chilling, isn't it? It's like preparing for something that you know you're going to do. Not a spur of the moment thing. It's like, I'm planning this.
Indicators of premeditation.
Yeah.
Shit is going to happen in this house. Mm. So, look. The attack was so frenzied that the defense tried to argue that Mary was too slight a woman to inflict such damage.
She's like a very angry woman, though.
They also tried to use the argument later on about epilepsy being a mental illness, that she was not of a right mind at the time of the attack, but the jury takes but 52 minutes to return a guilty verdict. Mary says nothing throughout the trial. She only replies that she is innocent of the crime when the judge passes the death sentence and asks if she has anything to say. When she's in jail, after the sentence has been passed, she is visited by her mother. She was allowed a visit from Frank Hogg, who she still loves.
Why would Frank go?
He doesn't.
Oh, good. Okay.
He doesn't show up. And apparently she waited and waited. And the only emotion she showed was her sobbing on the bed when she knew he wouldn't come.
He's not coming.
She was otherwise very calm and collected. She had but one request before her death, but we're going to come back to this.
Okay. Mice.
Mice. Give me mice to dance for me. Mary would be hanged on the 23rd of December, 1890. As I said, she was very composed before her death. No emotion, perfectly civil to the guards and the executioner. On the way to the gallows, she refused assistance from the female guards who would have accompanied her. Actually, by law, they would have had to. When they said, no, we will accompany you anyway, she replied, oh, well, if you don't mind going with me, I am pleased. In her final statement to reporters, she said, my sentence is a just one, but a great deal of the evidence against me is false. And then she would go to the gallows and drop to her death. Just before Christmas.
Just before Christmas. Oh, ruined Christmas for her.
Indeed. Now, that is not the end of her tale, for there are a few things that we need to cover.
I'm intrigued.
Firstly, this was quite the media sensation, as you can imagine. It was. So she just had to be added to the Chamber of Horrors at Madame Tussauds.
In that, what was it, that wax museum place?
That famous House of Wax.
The famous House of Wax,
yes. Famous House of Wax. Yes, indeed. Her exhibit included the pram.
Oh, that's harsh.
That is not nice. Items from her kitchen. Just random shit from her kitchen. 30,000 people attended
nice.
The exhibition. I don't know whether it was at the launch or whether they just said that year. They just tried to attribute
it to
her. Probably
not on the first day.
Well, maybe. Well, that's how many people would turn up for a bloody hanging. Her noose, apparently, is still at the Black Museum in Scotland Yard. Now, two more important things about this case.
Yes.
I said that she had made one request.
A special request, yes. Yeah. I'm intrigued.
She asked her solicitor, Mr. Freck Palmer, to visit her, to tidy her affairs. Mm. And she asked him to place a personal advert in the Madrid newspaper.
Oh, okay. Counter me intrigued.
The newspaper advert would read, M-E-C-P, last wish of M-E-W, have not betrayed, period. M-E-W, period.
Ooh, I say. Intriguing.
She never explained what this message was.
Ooh, I like that. Oh, no. I want to know.
So, M-E-C-P, we don't know.
Who's M-E-C-P?
Last wish of M-E-W is Mary Eleanor Wheeler.
Mary Eleanor Wheeler, yeah.
So her maiden name.
Yep.
We can assume.
Yeah, that failure. Yep, safe assumption, I think. Who's MECP? I want to know. Tell me.
In Spain.
Oh, that's very old. Oh.
And the lawyer said...
Mysteries.
The solicitor said, explain it. I will use it as a defence for your appeal. There were no appeals at the time, but I will go to the Home Office. I will do whatever it takes. And she just said, no. Put it in the paper.
Who's MECP?
Who's MECP? The final legacy of Mary Pearcy.
Mm.
Well, this was a big story. Big story in the late 1880s. Not a lot else happened around that time.
Was she Jack the Ripper?
Or could she be Jill the Ripper? Hey, you mentioned it earlier.
I did.
Yes, of course.
Of course she was.
Mary Pearcy is a Ripper suspect.
No, what it is MECP is the Ripper.
Well, yes. Come back to it.
Who's now in Spain?
Who is in Spain? So, as you can imagine, the theories behind her being Jack the Ripper are watertight.
Oh,
Nick.
Completely.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Airtight convictions going
on
there.
Would you like to hear the theories about it? She was a woman.
Well, yes, okay.
She killed some people.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, well, that tracks, yes.
Of course. It was thought that the Ripper could be a woman.
Surely not.
Who Lady people don't do such things. Who thought up, though, that the Ripper was a woman? Well, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
Who was mental? I'm just going to put it out there.
He had some peculiar ideas, it has to be said.
Sherlock Holmes, great. Also outside, fairies are everything. He thought the Ripper was a female, and he could have shouted anything at this point. So people started looking into the idea, could the Ripper be a woman? Now, Arthur Conan Doyle did surmise that it could have been a midwife. It could have been someone very strong. You know, you don't have to be particularly strong. You have to be insane.
Fast and stabby.
Mm. And Mary Pearcy obviously committed this horrendous act against a mother
Yeah, I'm not entirely convinced, I have to say. I'm not entirely convinced.
The one thing that doesn't link it, I'm just going to go and say it, one thing that was plucked out of the air is that in most of the ripperologists out there will know that in 2006, DNA testing was done on the letter, the boss letters, yes. The letters Jack the Ripper wrote to the newspapers, and they examined the saliva used on the stamps. And they determined or surmised, I'm not sure what would be the appropriate term here, but that saliva belonged to a woman. Oh. So if those letters were posted, which we keep forgetting the fact that they're hoaxes.
There is that, yes.
Yeah. Or it could have been a woman. And then they go, who are any of the female Ripper suspects? And they go back to Mary Piercy.
Mm.
So Mary Piercy was Jill the Ripper. That's right. A great idea, a theory. She killed someone around the time in 1890.
Yeah.
But definitely it was her. So she is Jill the Ripper. There we go. We sold it. But.
Who's MECP?
Who is MECP?
I want to know.
That is far better than the Bloody Ripper story.
MECP was the Ripper.
But that is the story of Mary Piercy.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, it's a good one,
it's
isn't
annoying,
it?
Annoying because I don't know who MECP was. I don't want to know.
Okay, there's a massive part of me that wants MECP to be a real person, but there's a tiny bit of me to go, I'm going to fuck with people.
Well, yeah. Because she was MEW.
MEW.
W was her maiden name.
Yes.
P, Piercy was...
Yeah.
So...
Maybe she was she saying it to herself?
Well, yeah. So that seems to have three of the initials that match her. Seems like a... big coincidence.
Well, I mean, not.
Oh, not impossible. No, yeah, absolutely.
It just seems a bit weird. I mean, yeah. that aligns with my theory that she just went Madrid. Fuck it, that
fuck
newspaper.
It. Why the hell not? Absolutely.
And she's just making everyone think.
But she doesn't seem like the criminal genius. It has to be said.
No, she was incredibly calm and stoic during her incarceration. Everyone said that she was actually one of the best prisoners. She was incredibly genteel. She wasn't overly friendly with people, but she was just very dignified and quiet. And the solicitor who came to get all her affairs in order, she just said, put this in the Madrid newspaper. And she refused point blank to anyone who asked her. She said, I will not tell you what it is. And maybe she's just making stuff up because she's crazy.
I don't know. But, I don't know if she would make stuff up. I mean, it seems like a weird thing to make up.
I know.
Because she does, so she doesn't seem like this criminal genius who's throwing suspicion onto other people. Or
no.
She's not using it to get out of it or anything.
Well, you would think she would clean up her goddamn house.
Well, exactly. So, she's not this sort of mastermind criminal cleverness. This is very much a thing of rage and this is a particular person that I want to get rid of because they're bastards.
Well,
but
I'll refer you back to her last statement to the press was this is a just sentence. But paraphrasing, a lot of the evidence against me is false. So what does that mean?
Well, that's very true.
Did something happen in that house?
If it's a just if she's been sentenced to death and she thinks that is a just sentence, so she must have done something to warrant that in
possibly.
Her mind.
So what I will say about the theories about the death as well, just to put people's mind at ease, is that they thought it was thought. That she killed Phoebe. She in this frenzied attack, she bashed her head in and slit her throat. It isn't thought that she purposefully went for the baby.
No.
That the baby was in the pram. She put Mary's body over the pram and the baby was suffocated as a result.
Yeah.
I don't think she meant for the baby to die.
Probably not.
But that was the thought, that the baby was suffocated by the body of the mother, which is awful.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that actually got me, that I thought about when you said it, that she was seen... A woman was seen late at night taking the pram out.
Yeah.
Thinking, well, there must have been the baby and Phoebe stuffed inside this pram with Mary going out, taking it for a walk type thing, and then dumping them in various places. So that's pretty organised and thought out.
Even if you have
to
a woman...
do that.
That's quite weird, as in if you have a woman draped across a pram...
So it must have been really
baby.
Stuffed in there. And that would also be a lot more noticeable to people just out on the streets and stuff like that. If you had someone just draped across a pram, people are going to go, something's weird here.
Well, I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, you think someone would say something.
But it's dark, and they just see a woman pushing a pram, which is a chilling image.
If you've got a body draped over a pram, that's a fairly obvious thing. But a woman, like, squashed into a pram.
But the body was left on a rubbish heap. Yeah. This blood-soaked pram was left one place, and the baby was left another place. So they've just scattered the bodies, and she's just shut down.
Who's MECP?
Was MECP the person behind all of this? Were they the Ripper?
Were they the Ripper?
If it was the Ripper, then Ripper would have done much worse shit, I think.
Yeah.
But there we go.
I need to Google Spanish. Was there a Spanish Ripper? Is there one in
Madrid? Was in correspondence with and like just...
No, I'm thinking if the Ripper went to Spain. Yes. And then was there more murderings in Spain?
Nick is going to solve this people.
Oh, yeah. I'm all over this.
What do you think, people? What do you think of Mary's story? What do you think of the main story? What do you think of the theories behind it?
Do you know who MECP is?
That's Nick was not going to rest until this is solved. Just hit us up with all of your thoughts and your theories on this one. Send it to us. Comment on the episode on social media and wherever you listen to The Poisonous Cabinet. Send us some reviews if you've actually loved this one.
Yes.
Actually, keep in touch with us on it.
Another good one. It's great. I like it. So do try the White Mouse cocktail. Give it a go. Make it better than I did. Use a honey syrup rather than just honey. That didn't work. A tasty, tasty cocktail. Saffron gin. Very, very nice. Very easy to make. And looks amazing. Just a couple of threads, pinches, bits of saffron in some gin. Leave it for a couple of days. Beautiful yellow.
We've also come up with a formula of the best possible episodes, which involve a Negroni and then Nick drinking lots of fizz, and it's absolutely class.
Yeah, I have actually. This bottle of fizz has gone down very quickly.
Well, you know what it is. It's a Cremant.
Oh, Cremant. Oh, Cremant. Cremant.
We've had fun on this episode. We hope you have too. But we want those theories. We are obsessed with this episode. We need to know who MECP is.
I want to know!
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Who's MECP?